If you're someone who avidly collects Starbucks points or air miles, you might have noticed that they do not go as far as they used to. And our guest today has joined us for a conversation about how his company is using Bitcoin to hopefully solve that problem. Ian Major is co-founder of Jolts Rewards, which is a Lightning Network developer building customer loyalty programs using the Bitcoin network. I'm Scott Dietles. I'm the CEO and founder of Block Rewards. And part of our mission in bringing Bitcoin to the workplace is helping people understand how it will help them. So if you're interested to learn something about how the Lightning Network might solve your loyalty rewards problem, stick around. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. We are joined this week by special guest, Ian Major from Jolts Rewards. Ian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's a pleasure. I love what you guys are doing, and it's an honor to be here with you.
Likewise. Yeah, lots to talk about today about Jolts and what you guys are up to and some bigger topics. Maybe just if you could give us a quick TLDR about yourself for our listeners.
Definitely. Yeah. So I worked for a long time in software as a service, enterprise software as a service. Came into Bitcoin, kind of went down the rabbit hole around 2016, 2017. Increasingly over time, felt the urge to devote all my waking hours to thinking about Bitcoin and then eventually kind of working in Bitcoin. And so a lot of my experiences from my past life, the consultancy I was a part of was actually acquired by MasterCard, interestingly enough, which gave me a view into the, you know, belly of the beast and sort of traditional world of payments. But a lot of that experience kind of flowed into what would ultimately become Jolts. So I'm the co-founder of Jolts. I look after business development there. And yeah, pumped to be able to spend ever more time working on and thinking about Bitcoin.
It's a funny thing how commonly the phrase, eventually I started wanting to spend all my time in Bitcoin, is included in the self-description portion.
That's right.
I love it. I mean, that applies to me too. So let's just maybe talk a little bit about Jolts. You guys operate on the Lightning network and are a rewards platform. So like what is that and what do you guys do?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, we've had a pretty interesting history as a company. And so what I'll call kind of phase one, where we got our start, we launched last year with a focus, as you said, on Bitcoin rewards products. So, you know, you have all sorts of different products out there. People might be familiar with the Fold card. There's other similar products. Lolly is a browser extension. These are all great, but we would label those as being kind of B2C in nature, right? And we felt that there was an opportunity to bring more B2B tools. So how can we enable other businesses to bring Bitcoin rewards into their environments? And so we built a whole suite of tools, including e-commerce plugins, like think of a, you know, Shopify store or a WooCommerce store. We built a API for more kind of custom integrations. We're using a really, really cool integration with Zapier, which now enables, you know, thousands and thousands of different platforms to be able to trigger, you know, these Bitcoin rewards. And so you can start to think about a really wide range of use cases. And Satoshis are this perfect little micro incentive for making purchases, making referrals, you know, signing up for a newsletter, advancing a deal in your Salesforce or CRM system, closing that deal as a sales team member. The list goes on and on and on. And so that's really powerful. And so we have a number of customers, including, you know, the likes of Blockstream and others that are now using our suite of solutions. With that said, what's I think interesting now is that, you know, not surprisingly, a lot of our customers to date are Bitcoin companies, as you would expect. And as we started talking with more and more non-Bitcoin companies, it became pretty clear pretty quickly that a lot of them were not yet ready to jump straight to Bitcoin, even if it was as an addition to what they were already doing, right? We would never sort of sell them on, hey, replace your whole kind of rewards program with Bitcoin. But even then, right, they're still, and I think a lot of people listening can probably resonate with this, even with their own family and, you know, friends, there's still a lot of hesitation, right? Oh, Bitcoin's this volatile thing, and we can get into why that is or isn't. But that is the sort of perception. And so we went down this rabbit hole as well of like, well, how can we accommodate that? How can we build stepping stones, more interim stepping stones to enable more mainstream businesses to kind of start their journey onto the life raft that is Bitcoin? And so, you know, we can get into this in more detail if it's helpful. But we ultimately started building on the Taproot Assets protocol. So if folks are familiar with, you know, the Lightning Network as this sort of layer two on Bitcoin, makes Bitcoin payments super fast, instantly settled, you know, super low fees, very high throughput. Taproot Assets now enables us to bring other types of assets. And I know this will be a controversial topic in the community, and it always is. But think of things like stablecoins, and we can get into some of the interesting statistics around usage that I think even the most sort of ardent maximalists would have to say, wow, okay, that's interesting. And so we feel that by meeting people where they are in terms of their existing unit of account, which if you think about it is like the most sticky habit in their lives, like that is the most sticky network effect in their lives. If we can meet them where they are, then we can at least start bringing them onto the life raft. We can at least start getting the tools of self-sovereignty into their hands and, you know, God forbid, you know, CBDC and all this other stuff. So that's also been a really interesting, what I might call phase two of the company. We built the first non-custodial wallet that supports Taproot Assets and also Lightning and on-chain Bitcoin. And we realized that a lot of people are interested in that. And so we're really leaning into that now as our main focus.
Lots to unpack there. And we'll go back to the start and work our way through those points as the conversation goes. I've seen you talk about this before, and we kind of touched on it in a different episode we did with Ivan Makadonsky from Breeze. The idea of the challenge with loyalty point, different kinds of reward programs, basically being denominated in a company's own currency. So like if you're storing wealth, air quotes, in Starbucks points or in Air Miles, how would, like, you know, your take on what you're doing as a consumer when you're storing your rewards and loyalty points?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, like, there's a lot of that economic activity. I think it's at least several hundred billion dollars worth of value sloshing about in these different units of loyalty value globally. So that's a pretty big chunk of money. And we did a little bit of analysis looking at some of the more notable recent examples over the last just couple years of Starbucks, Hyatt Hotels, American Airlines, and how they do these devaluations of their loyalty points, right? I don't think this will be overly surprising to anyone listening, but a lot of people simply have not done the math yet to look at just how quickly these points lose value over time. And what we calculated was approximately 40% or so each year in value that consumers are losing in purchasing power of your points. Starbucks, for example, doubled the number of points required for redeeming a free drink. That was early last year. So again, you know, these are huge changes. They typically happen overnight. And what are you going to do? Now, a lot of people listening might say, okay, well, like, sure, Starbucks points, like, I'm not, you know. But maybe you are addicted to Starbucks coffee, and maybe that is a big deal for you. But think about the people who are also traveling a lot, who have, you know, tons of value locked up in airline miles, in hotel points, right? Like, this is a very real thing. And so, you know, that and in my past life, like at MasterCard, we were looking from an analytics lens at the performance of different loyalty programs. And we were, you know, trying to pick that apart and understand why were some programs delivering a positive return to the business. And why were some programs not? And guess what? The scary little truth is that I think it's roughly 2/3 of loyalty programs are estimated to at best break even. So this is a huge issue. And if you peel that onion back and ask, well, like, why is that the case? The number one consumer pain point, not surprising, it's value. So consumers can intuit this. They feel this. But again, they probably haven't done the math. And they probably haven't asked the next question of like, well, what's the solution to this?
Yeah, loyalty plan debasement. It's a combination of all these different things that can help people actually understand Bitcoin, because you're talking about a closed network with rules that are flexible, and the, you know, we'll call it the obligation of the company to honor this thing is really like a liability on their balance sheet. So the easiest thing they can do for themselves to manage that is to tinker around with what the points are worth. And this is just, it's something that people do. Like, people do love to collect points. And so, yeah, I think it's such an interesting topic.
No, you nailed it. And it's something that people can resonate with, you know, obviously not everyone on earth, but a lot of people have in some way, shape or form, whether it's a retailer, airline, hotel, have interacted in some way, even if it's an old school kind of punch card, right? Like, it's easy to to conceptualize. And as you said, Scott, there are a lot of nice learning and teaching moments there in relation to Bitcoin.
So I guess then for the listeners, like the next step for me is, you know, on the one hand, it's kind of thinking like, well, how appetizing are Bitcoin rewards when Bitcoin is still pretty, you know, held by very few people as a percentage of all customers? And then I guess the counter argument is, or the flip side of that coin would be, what, you know, why would businesses want to think about giving up the ability to really effectively issue their own loyalty currency and offer Bitcoin instead, where they have no control over it?
Yeah, great questions. I mean, how we've typically gone about those conversations and what we see resonates is talking about, well, like, who are these people? And as you said, you know, right now, I mean, depends on the geography, depends on the market, of course, but what, maybe 10 to 15% or so of any given customer base might find this like really exciting. There's definitely others who might be curious, intrigued, who might engage with it in some way. But again, very hard to do that estimate. And you're right in identifying that as one of the early points of pushback that you might get from a more, you know, traditional business. But you could first start to talk about, well, like, who are these people? Bakkt did some really nice analysis. I think it was 2022, late 2022, that showed, and again, this was a broader umbrella of crypto adopters, but, you know, these are folks who skew younger, not surprising. However, despite that relative youth, they also skew higher income than the average population. And so these are two variables that are typically at odds, right? Like, you would typically expect that the younger, you know, the younger consumer segment, who you know you need to attract, but you're sort of accepting the fact that, well, they're probably a little bit lower income than, you know, older consumers who, you know, have had longer time in their careers and that sort of thing. So that's very rare to get those two things sort of aligned together. That's very attractive. Furthermore, these are people who, as we know, and as listeners can probably attest, are highly motivated to change behavior. You know, we did some kind of, we did some surveying as Jolt and found that, you know, over 90% of Bitcoiners would switch allegiance from one business to another if it meant that they could earn rewards. And so, right, that, you know, that sort of, insatiable appetite to stack more sats, like we know what that's like. So when you wrap all that together, like that's attractive. So you can attract this new consumer segment, and that definitely resonates for a lot of businesses. But then there are others who inevitably will say, well, you know, that's not a big enough percentage. And oh, by the way, that very pushback is why we went down the path of Taproot assets. We can maybe, you know, talk through that in a little bit more detail in relation to their control, the control factor over this. And why would they give this up when, as you rightly pointed out, Scott, like, it's this nice release valve. You know, if I'm a business and I have costs going up, just like we do, right? Inflationary pressures, making the cost of everything go up. Like, the most painful thing I can do as a business is outright increase the prices of my goods and services. Like, that's painful. And so if there's any other release valves out there, I'm going to do those first. And one of the release valves is debasement of these loyalty points, which, as you rightly said, sits on their balance sheet as a liability. So why would they ever give up that control? And I don't think that happens overnight, but ultimately, if you look at the kind of longer arc of history with loyalty propositions and those propositions that have, you know, gone on to win and sort of become the standard, the consumer wins eventually. Like, the consumer does ultimately win. And you can already see some early signs of this with Starbucks. I know I sort of implicitly bashed them earlier, commenting on how they devalue their points, but to their credit, they are also, you know, quite innovative in how they think of this stuff. You know, they have been experimenting with their sort of Web3 kind of version of loyalty, which, again, you know, some listeners may roll their eyes, but, you know, they are sort of pushing the envelope and asking the question, like, how can we make this a more open system where this unit of loyalty that I am receiving is much more kind of interoperable? It doesn't just live merely within my sort of four walls. And I'm not saying that Starbucks is there or anywhere close to it yet, but you're starting to see the early signs of that. So I do think it'll take time, but this more open, interoperable loyalty system where things are much more interchangeable, I think that adds so much utility for the consumer. It's only a matter of time before that desire ultimately wins out, but it's going to take some time for sure.
Yeah, it makes sense. The better reward is a better incentive to support that business for sure. Starbucks is such an interesting example to me because like they basically become a bank, right? Like they take these, they also, this is a different part of their business, but they take the cash from gift cards and then they invest that money and it generates a yield. And all this money that sits in gift cards is actually an immense part of how they operate.
It's crazy. And you could extend that, you know, that notion that every business is now a bank, I think in many ways is a symptom of this kind of over-financialized fiat world that we live in. Like it is crazy. You know, there's so many retailers now who make a lion's share of their profits off of, you know, essentially lending and credit cards and financial products with their customers as opposed to the core business. So it really is a glaring symptom, I think, of the system in which we live. And it's unfortunate, but you know, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's these are cycles, I think. Like we're always living in a cycle and we're at that point now. Things will change. So yeah, maybe let's talk a little bit about Taproot Assets and to drill it down to like the ultra basics. You know, you're talking about different kinds of assets existing on Bitcoin, and one of them would be a U.S. denominated dollar coin. What is the intro to Taproot Assets?
Yeah. So Taproot Assets is a protocol developed by Lightning Labs, who is behind LND, which is the biggest implementation of the Lightning Network. So the Lightning Network, right, layer two on Bitcoin, has different implementations. LND is one of them. And this was formerly known as Taro, if anyone listening remembers Taro when it was first announced. Back in 2022, Lightning Labs at the time had done their Series B, and they were looking to build this protocol that would make Bitcoin, and specifically the Lightning Network, a multi-asset network. And again, that's always going to be a controversial thing in the community. But what's really nice about Taproot Assets is it is an off-chain protocol, meaning that the metadata that sort of describes these different assets, that all sort of resides off-chain. And then what's going on-chain is a very, very efficient, small data footprint. So for those listeners that might be, you know, familiar or at least have heard of things like ordinals and, you know, and runes and things like that, like these are, you know, controversial topics in part because they have a very big on-chain footprint. And so Taproot Assets, I think, is a much, much, much more efficient way of doing that, but it also allows us to get the benefits of the Lightning Network. And so to share a couple kind of real world, you know, use cases for how we're thinking about this. And again, we didn't sort of like wake up one day and say, you know what, like I want assets on Bitcoin. You know, this was very much an evolution based on what we were hearing from the market. There's a business called Kilo Club. This is a fitness center of all things. They're based in Vegas. They're opening new locations as well. And the owner always kind of had this idea of kind of building this sort of member owned, you know, gym. And it's like, and as part of that, he wanted to institute a rewards program. But his concern, going back to that like 10 to 15% or so of his customer base who would be in any way, shape or form enthusiastic about earning Bitcoin, like that was always his main concern. And so with Taproot Assets, we can create the Kilo token. And guess what? It can actually be a 1 to 1,000 because he's playing on Kilo. But every 1 Kilo token represents 1,000 sats. And so to the end user, and so this is a gym member, they scan this app to get into the fitness club. Every time they do that, they accrue a reward. And to them, it looks and feels like a traditional loyalty point. And furthermore, it's helpful for Kilo Club because it retains their branding. And it's kind of to your point, Scott, it's another way of asking that like control question of, okay, there's control in relation to the value of the points, but there's also control around like the branding of the points, which is also immensely valuable to businesses. So this allows them to preserve and retain that branding aspect while also giving the points real value because they can be converted into Bitcoin. But importantly, you're letting people do that on their own time horizon, right? You're not kind of forcing them to get up to speed on Bitcoin, like right here, right now. You know, you got to get up this big kind of learning curve. So they can accrue this thing. They can see what their balance is. They can see it denominated in dollars, you know, as a more kind of digestible version for them. And then they can convert that. And in the future, you know, they can use it for different things. They could vote for new equipment. You know, there might be new ways of earning that. You hit a new PR. Like whatever. You know, he wants to kind of play on the proof of work sort of concept, which is kind of cool. So that's like a real use case that I think helps illustrate why this is at least important for us. And then going back to one of the other typical pieces of pushback that you'll hear from people is like, oh, Bitcoin's so volatile. Like, you know, and again, we could argue that it's actually, you know, the dollar that's volatile and it's reflecting that in the price of Bitcoin. But, you know, that's a huge piece of this. And so what I found quite interesting as we were digging into stablecoin usage, again, I want nothing more than to get everyone in the world, you know, a piece of Bitcoin and onto the Bitcoin network. Like, I want Bitcoin to be not just a store of value, but also a medium of exchange, a unit of account, all these things. Like, that is my goal. But to get there, I think we have to acknowledge where people are and where they're starting off with. And a great artifact of that is if you look at payment volumes of different technologies. So you can look at payment volumes of stablecoins, just as an example. And people listening who are like, yeah, Ian, like, I don't know. So much, you know, I don't know. There's probably a lot of junk in stablecoin payment volumes. And you would be right. Like, there's a whole lot of volume in terms of cross exchange settlement. So big crypto exchanges use stablecoins to settle between themselves. There's a lot of, you know, automated smart contracts and bot payments and all these things. If you strip all of that away and isolate it down to at least a very good estimate of like truly organic peer-to-peer payment activity, you're talking order of magnitude $250 billion a month. For context, that's about 20% or so of Visa, right? Like, that's big. That's a big number. And for a technology that has been around for, again, a handful of years, and what I'm about to say next is going to be painful. But keep in mind, I am super bullish on Lightning. I am building a company on Lightning. So what I'm about to say is not a dig at Lightning, but Lightning, by comparison, is about 1,000 times less payment volume than what we see with stablecoins. And again, does that mean Lightning's dead? No, far from it. River Financial put out a fantastic report in, I believe, October of last year that folks should check out if you're interested. But it showed just how quickly Lightning is growing. And it's growing, you know, organically. You have all these different, you know, whether it's kind of Nostr tipping use cases, you have true circular economies popping up in more and more places around the world. So it's growing rapidly. However, in absolute terms, there is still a gigantic giga-size difference. And I think what that's telling us is that, again, being able to enable people to move value denominated in something that they sort of like have to use, right? A lot of people, like, you have to pay your expenses in you know, dollars or whatever it is. And so I think it is our thesis. Maybe it's wishful thinking. Maybe it's overly optimistic, but it's a thesis we think is worth pursuing. Is, can we sort of accelerate and parallelize those steps of the process, right? Like, we're just going to kind of sequentially go from store value. And at some point, we're going to like switch over to medium of exchange. And at some point, we're going to switch over to unit of account. Obviously, in reality, it's a lot more messy. And we think that we can kind of pull some of that forward by embracing this. Now, there is another good debate that maybe we don't get into today, but different types of stable coins, I think, also matters, right? One could argue that, well, like, Tether, whose collateral value, you know, whose collateral is backed by treasuries, US government treasuries. Okay. Like, are we perpetuating the fiat system by embracing this? That's a good argument. And that's a whole different conversation. So what I would be really excited to see is a Bitcoin backed stablecoin on Lightning. So all the value for that underlying collateral is Bitcoin. So you're driving more demand for Bitcoin and you're enabling people to interoperate their balance and denominate that in either sats or dollars. And I think if you do that in the right way, we can make a real difference on accelerating adoption. But again, that's a theory, but it's some maybe examples there.
Yeah. You know, and I don't think it's a controversial thing even remotely to say globally, the demand for dollars is much higher than demand for Bitcoin. Like, and so, you know, some of these use cases, I think if people who are trying to escape their local monetary network, like in Turkey or Lebanon, wherever, their preference is Tether, U.S. stablecoin, probably, than Bitcoin, even though they would probably be better off in Bitcoin. But yeah, so I hear you on this sort of like phased in approach. And I think that, yeah, stable coins, you know, we did an episode with Rob Wallace from Bitcoin News, and we were talking about ordinals. I think an important thing maybe to point out for the listeners is these are the other complaint about these on-chain activities is sort of like non-monetary use case for the limited amount of data that's available in a Bitcoin block. But so if this is all happening off the chain, then that sort of, it's an interesting, you know, I'm always amazed with Bitcoin how as an open source protocol, it invites all kinds of problem solving and people are welcome to put their ideas forward. And, you know, it's up to, you know, the market and inertia to see what are the good ones and what's going to get it used.
It's a beautiful thing. Very market-driven approach. So yeah, I always say let markets reign, and you know we'll figure out the rest. But it's exciting times for sure.
As you imagine the small business of tomorrow, and they're thinking about loyalty programs, and you guys turned out to be right. Like, what is the average business? What does that look like? This is maybe to borrow from your current day example of the gym from Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, I our hope would be a fewfold. And we've even tinkered with like, how do you enable, there's different benefits that could be conferred to a business in this. There's the obvious one of like, okay, this allows me to attract this new consumer segment and give them more value in my loyalty proposition. There's another interesting side of this that I think is yet to be fully fleshed out, but there's a concept in traditional loyalty that's called breakage. This is the percentage of rewards that go completely unclaimed, right? And that number, that percentage can range wildly. I mean, it could be as low as 20%. It could be as high as 70, 80%, depending on the industry, depending on the business, depending on the company. And so, you know, like you want to be thoughtful. I'm not out here going to advocate for a business putting sort of all these restrictions on how these things happen. But imagine for a moment that you have a small business and they've instituted a Bitcoin rewards program, you know, powered by Jolt or whomever. And you have to claim those rewards within a certain time frame, you know, within a week or a month or 90 days or whatever that time frame is. It's a reasonable time frame in the context of that business. For those that don't claim it, what if that Bitcoin goes automatically to the company's treasury and you start establishing a small treasury position in Bitcoin as a small business from the breakage of that loyalty program? Like, I think that starts to get really interesting and becomes a more multi-level kind of benefit to that business. So that is what I would hope for is, and not only that, but you also have, I think, what could be really compelling, interesting, like local interoperable networks of loyalty. And at some level, if it's just Bitcoin, if it's just sats, like that is the most interoperable you could get. So, you know, I could be earning Bitcoin here and spending it elsewhere. So my hope is that this benefits not just the business from the context of, you know, winning new customers, not just the business from being able to maybe establish that treasury position, but then also encourages them to actually accept Bitcoin as payment, because now all these consumers are, you know, accruing these sats and they want to spend it. They want to do different things with it. And that yet again flows into the small business's treasury. Maybe they convert 95% of that, you know, into fiat, which they need to pay their bills. But 5% of that goes to, so I think you can like really start to bootstrap a, you know, that circular economy that we all kind of want to see and build with rewards. So that would be my hope.
Yeah, it's like, you know, bootstrapping, crowdsourcing a new currency happening where the incumbent currencies aren't going to be happy about it. This is really like a one-time event in human history that we get to watch, and it's so cool.
Humbling for sure. I'm very, 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 very grateful to be alive in the era post Satoshi for sure.
So we've done a few different episodes talking about the Lightning Network, and I think it's an interesting subject for people to learn a little bit about. Your thoughts on like where the Lightning Network is today and what does it need to, what needs to happen next?
Yeah. So I even think maybe as some helpful context, like thinking about where it has been. And I remember the early days, whether, you know, maybe 2019, 2020 or so, when Lightning was being heralded as like, oh, it's going to solve everything. It's going to be, it's the perfect solution. It's great. And it is great. But I think you had these sort of overinflated expectations of how quickly it was going to materialize and be like really, you know, production, enterprise ready, whatever we want to sort of say. Additionally, you know, Lightning, the Lightning Network itself is quite interesting, right? For those not familiar, you have this fundamental concept of liquidity. And so if I open a Lightning channel with you, Scott, we can now pass value back and forth any number of times between ourselves without having to settle that activity on chain, which is very nice. So you can bring a lot of activity off chain. And that is one of the big ways you scale Bitcoin and scale Bitcoin payments. If I need to send to Steven, but I don't have a channel open with Steven and you do, I can route through you. And so you basically, the Lightning Network itself is this sea of two of two payment channels. However, there's a caveat there because I can send value to you, but I may or may not be able to receive payments in. I need something called inbound liquidity or inbound capacity. So again, there's nuances here that have created a bunch of UX headaches with Lightning, particularly in relation to using it in a self-custodial way. You also have things like, you know, if you're running Lightning, you know, self-custodially, that de facto means that you're also running a node. And the node could be sort of packaged up in your phone with certain apps like, you know, Phoenix or Breeze or whatever. It could be connected remotely to the, you know, the Umbral node you're running at your home, whatever. But like, if you're using Lightning in a self-custodial way, you are running a node somewhere, somehow. And again, all of these things have added complexity to the user experience. And so you had this period of like elevated expectations that just sort of plunged. And now everyone's like, oh, Lightning's dead. You know, Lightning's over. Lightning's a failed experiment. And you see this a lot in sort of other crypto circles and other crypto ecosystems. Oh, Bitcoin will never scale. But we've like swung the pendulum so far now the other way. The reality is that a lot of Lightning's early UX pain points have largely been solved. You have the rise of LSPs, Lightning service providers, that can provide that inbound liquidity and help with that cold start problem that you have with self-custodial Lightning usage. You have very clever, you know, UXs now in apps like Phoenix. You even have different ways of abstracting away that channel liquidity complexity of Lightning entirely using the use of swaps. For people that are familiar with Moon Wallet, M-U-U-N, that's how they do it, right? They give you this one singular unified balance that allows you, the user, to interoperate between on-chain and Lightning, but they've abstracted all that away with what are called submarine swaps. And those have some drawbacks that, you know, are probably too much detail for this discussion. But suffice it to say, like, we now have a lot of the ingredients that solve those pain points. And in fact, a lot of what we're building at Jolts with our SDK and our wallet as well, which is built on our SDK, takes a lot of that into account and provides a really excellent experience. I think going forward, a couple kind of remaining pieces that are going to be really helpful for folks are going to be things like, you know, offline receive. So if you're using the Lightning Network in a self-custodial way, again, you're running that node wherever it is in your device, in the cloud, wherever. That node needs to be online. And so to receive a payment, you need to be online, or you need, you know, the app needs to have background services enabled, you know, something to that effect. So there's a couple different solutions for that as well. You know, there are a number of ideas, propositions, proposals. Things like covenants, which again, started out years ago as a very contentious topic. I don't know that we have time to get into covenants today, but suffice it to say that covenants can benefit in a big way the Lightning Network as well by enabling things called channel factories. So these are a couple things that I think are going to, you know, define the sort of immediate future of Lightning. And I think the remaining big outstanding question that we may not have a great answer to yet is, well, okay, fine. we've addressed a lot of the UX pain points of using Lightning self-custodially, and there's, you know, other pieces that are getting resolved as well. Yeah. So basically what I would say to folks, you know, I think about this too much, apparently. What I would say to folks is, like, one, the future is very rosy for Lightning. What I was going to say is, like, this last payment mile, or this last mile payment technology. And you see people talking about things like Arc, things like eCash, and each of these are what we could envision as this, like, last mile payment solution. What that means is, if you think about Bitcoin layer one as this sort of, like, train track moving big cargo, big heavy freight, and the Lightning Network is akin to highways and moving, you know, what do I use for, like, the country road? That's, I think, the really big picture question that's being wrestled with now. And I personally think that self-custodial Lightning can be that solution. But you are also seeing these other proposals, eCash, Arc being probably the two most notable versions of that. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But I would just encourage folks who see a lot of hate on Lightning on, you know, X or wherever, things are a lot better than the haters would suggest. And I see that as someone who is pretty close in all this.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I've never tried to build a instant payment system before, but it seems like it works pretty well to me. I mean, I get that there's things that are being worked on, but it's funny, you know, it's something of a symptom of how instantaneous we expect things to be. Like, if you can't build something that's better than MasterCard in 4 years, you failed. And I mean, you've used the term self-custodial a lot. Like, I think one of the other really interesting pieces of the Lightning conversation is, so if you're holding your own Lightning sats in a self-custodial way, that's one thing, one way to interact with it. There is a custodial option, and the custodial option, which works typically really well, poses some gray area for the legality of the third party, would be the right way to say it, that's facilitating the money moving around.
Yeah, definitely. And you're hitting on a number of very correct points. Like, on the one side, all the sort of UX challenges I just described and alluded to are specific to self-custodial Lightning usage. In a custodial model where the custodian is taking all of that away for you, I mean, it's a dream. It's easy. Like, it works very well. And, you know, and then there's this debate of, like, well, do we really want 99%+ of the population using custodial solutions? If we're being really honest with ourselves, like, that's how the world works today. I'm not advocating that that is how the world should work in the future. I certainly hope it doesn't. But you're right that the custodial, you know, experience is really nice. It does present these challenges, as you've mentioned, from a legality standpoint. I think if broader Bitcoin and crypto is a gray area for regulators, the Lightning Network specifically is, like, the grayest of the gray. And we face that and, you know, see that reality every day as a Lightning company. Part of this is why we have built all our solutions as self-custodial, because we don't want to grapple with all of that. And we think it's the right way to, you know, provide a solution for users. But yeah, there's open questions around money service businesses here in the US, at least.
And the challenge, maybe just for listeners, the challenge here is, because Lightning, I guess it can be done, but it really does move money very quickly. And these things become a challenge for the existing sort of money surveillance architecture, like FinTrack and AML.
100%. And Scott, that's a really, really good and important point. You know, a lot of people sort of point at the legacy system and say, oh, you know, it takes X number of days or weeks for final settlement of a fiat payment. I mean, a lot of that is not necessarily the technology. It is the layers of compliance and checks that payment is going through as it sort of flows through these different intermediaries in the traditional system. So that is true. And, you know, with instant settlement, I mean, so it's not really clear to me what that future looks like. I think there is a very strong case to be made that, you know, doing, you know, self-custodial Lightning usage, like, it's hard for me to imagine regulators going after that too hard. I do think custodians are going to have to either, like, get the licenses. They're going to, like, have to get the money transmitter licenses here in the US or, you know, whatever jurisdiction that they're in. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, but it definitely poses an open question of, you know, what this will look like.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a small thing. Like, these custodial apps are subject to being like removed from app stores. Owners could be, or founders arrested. Like, they're not playing around.
No, there's been, yeah, a lot of crackdown, obviously, here in the US. I mean, there's been crackdown, you know, elsewhere as well. And, yeah, it'll remain to be seen. I mean, I think our philosophy has always been like, you know, self-custodial is the kind of, you know, as a company in terms of our mission of empowering people with financial self-sovereignty, like that's the way we want to go. And if we can kind of solve the UX pain points and make it a comparably excellent experience as what you would get with a custodial solution, then like, you know, we sweep a lot of this away.
Cool. So you guys recently were successful in the pitch day in Nashville, the Bitcoin conference. Congratulations.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
And so what are you most excited about for Jolts over the next 12 or 24 months?
Yeah. So we've, again, as I alluded to earlier, we're really focusing hard on our wallet technology. So you will see us roll out the Jolts wallet, which is really a demonstration of what can be built with our SDK or our software development kit. And that software development kit would allow other businesses, developers to bring self-custodial Bitcoin, Lightning, and Taproot assets to their applications, to their apps. So that's the kind of big thing we'll be working on probably for the rest of this year. We also do have some, you know, very exciting kind of client engagements, both on the reward side of things, as well as with this sort of new world of Taproot assets. We have a Brazilian stablecoin issuer that we're working with to issue their stablecoin on the Lightning Network as a Taproot asset. It's been very interesting to learn more about that market and, you know, some of the really kind of hardcore users that they have there. So we will have some really exciting stuff that's rolling out over the coming couple of months.
Cool. And so for, I know you have your own pod, which is great. And, you're active on X. For our listeners who can find more of you online, is there anywhere specifically you want to point them to?
Yeah, I'm on X at Ian_Major. You can also, if you just Google Ian Major, Bitcoin, you will find my, YouTube channel. I'm like a way less cool version of BTC Sessions, but similar sort of educational and tutorial style content on all sorts of different, topics and tools. And you can also find Jolts on Twitter at Jolts_BTC, or you can find us at joltsrewards.com.
I don't know if you're all that much less cool than Ben, but
Ben's a pretty cool guy, Scott. I'll take the compliment.
He is a pretty cool guy. We love Ben on the show. Okay, man. Thanks for coming on, Ian. Appreciate you and the work you're doing. And if you're listening to the show, I want to thank you as well for tuning in and hope to see you again next week.
Pleasure, Scott. Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits, supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.